This is Community and Unity on Alaska, a co-production of Alaska Public Media and Unalaska Community Broadcasting. I'm Ann Hillman. In April 2017, community members in Unalaska Dutch Harbor on the Aleutian Chain wanted to hold a public conversation about immigration in a town of only 4,600 people. More than 40% of the population was born outside of the United States, primarily in Asia. 60% of the adults speak a language other than English at home. Most people there, including immigrants, work in the fishing industry, which drives the town's economy. Dutch Harbor is the largest fishing port in the nation. Nearly 800 million pounds of seafood, worth more than $210 million, passed through the town in 2015. The community is diverse, but people say they get along. Could the negative national rhetoric about immigrants change that? What's happening in Unalaska that keeps the community strong? Those were the topics of two separate discussions, one that was open to the entire community and one with a high school senior English class. These are highlights from both conversations.
My name is Nancy. I came to the United States in 1979.
Nancy was one of the first Filipino residents of Unalaska, and she opened the community conversation.
I was married with an immigrant, and then I came here, and then, well, I started working in Kodiak. But there are so many people there, like Filipinos. There are all a lot of immigrant people over there. But when I came to Dutch Harbor, after, I think I was only there for like 2 months or 3 months, I came to Dutch Harbor, and I like it here, because, you know, we have so many different kind of culture people up here, and it's really, you know, working in the cannery up here with all this different culture is really makes you more, feel like you are welcome in this community. So when I came here, it was just really small town, and there's nothing, there's no bridge, and everything is is gravel.
Was there a Filipino community here when you moved here back in 1980?
No, we don't have any Filipino community yet. But they're all mostly or from California working in the cannery, you know, after season is done, they always, everybody's going home. But I kind of stayed here more longer because I really don't have a big family up here. When I came here, I was by myself. And then I met Frank Kelty and married him after 6 months. Oh!
What's it like for you now, 30 years on, when the Filipino community locally started growing so much?
Oh, it was really nice. You know, it feels a lot better because you see a lot of Filipinos and community up here now, especially. There's a lot of residents up here now, so it's just like, it's just good to be a lot of Filipino community. Now we do have a lot of film. Now, which is mostly our Filipinos too. So it's one of our organization here. It helps a lot too for our community here, especially for Filipinos.
Helps in terms of like building stronger cultural identity or helps?
It does, yeah. Because we try to build our own culture still, but you know, being kids, like now my grandchildren, they're born here and they grew up here. We're still trying to help them to realize that they are still Filipinos, even though they were born here in the United States. So, yeah, we don't want to make sure we still speak our own language still. But, of course, they don't really speak it, and they just understand it. And they still speak English back to you, but still the culture is there, and they won't. They still understand our culture and the respect to each other, too.
Kay, a high school senior, arrived 20 years after Nancy, after the Filipino community was already established.
So I moved here, or to America, when I was 8 from the Philippines. And when I first moved, well, I went to Hawaii first, and then I went here, and I lived in Hawaii for a little bit. And then I moved here, and I've lived here for 10 years now. I didn't know anything about the community. I didn't speak, like, any English. And, like, it was pretty overwhelming for me, like, when I was super young, but, like, I adapted to it, obviously. And It was much more different. Like in Hawaii, it was a lot more like intimidating, but also like I had family there, so like I had like a safety net or whatever support system. And then when I came here, it was just like me, my dad, my mom, and my brother. It was kind of like not the same actually, because like you didn't have that much family and you didn't know anything. But at the same time, like I think this town was pretty welcoming. And I like that.
So do you feel like living here, there's a large Filipino population, do you feel like you're still connected to your culture?
Oh, yeah. Like, because I know there's people who, like, there's Filipino people who, like, directly came from, like, they have a story in their life, like, oh, yeah, that's where I came from. And so they have the same experiences as I have. And then, like, we relate in that way. And, like, it gives me a sense of home sometimes. Yeah.
Does it help you connect with what you consider to be your cultural values?
Oh, yeah, it does. It, like, reminds me of home. Like, anything that reminds me of home reminds me of my cultural values, basically.
And what are those values?
I don't know. Well, like, religion, that, what we believe in, and just, like, we don't, like, we, like, Philippines is not, like, a rich country, and so, like, we know what we're used to. We know, like, we, our essentials are basically, like, we're light. Like, it's, like, minimalistic, kind of. Like, we're only going to take what we need. And, like, and so coming here, like, I felt like I had, like, an abundance of, like, everything.
Kids who were born and raised in Unalaska echoed some of Kay's thoughts. They work to maintain their cultural identities, often through language. And language can bring them together.
I speak Spanish sometimes.
Does that feel important to you?
Yeah, because it's my culture, and also I just like to.
Do any of the rest of you speak a different language when you're at home?
Sometimes me and my mom use words and sentences in Nungintanu, which is the culture of, like, a lot of Aleuts still live here.
Do you identify as Aleut?
Yeah, my mom. I got it from my mom's side.
What kinds of things, other than speaking in a few words, do you do to try to remain connected to that culture?
Well, since my grandpa and my great-grandpa are, since they, when they were kids, they spoke the whole entire language, and they're teaching us more about it, like their grandchildren, and they're passing it down, and I'm doing the dances and the older traditions.
I guess, like, camps. A lot of people with roots that tie back to another country, I feel we are all raised to understand the language, may not speak it, but we do have that root where we understand older people that are from the same country. When they speak to us, we'll respect them in a way that we have these certain words or titles to call people. Like, in my class, there's a lot of Filipinos, as, like, the school has a big Asian population. But, like, having the no barriers with the whole race thing, like, all of us, like, a lot of people in our class call each other ate and kuya, which means our big sister and big brother in Tagalog. So it's kind of, we're not just classmates, we're basically family.
The town's mayor, Frank Kelty, says the efforts to maintain cultural identities are apparent across the community.
Unalaska is very lucky because we are exposed to these people's culture. As an example, Martin Luther King Day ceremony here. We have the Samoan dancers. We have Filipino dancers. We have the Yunnan dancers. We've had a high school student who was from Mongolia doing a dance. We've had other, I think, some Vietnamese people participating. And we get to see that. And, you know, the Filipino community, they used to have, well, they still do once in a while, the Santa Cruz Festival, where they dress up in gowns, have dates, and march, you know, a mile down the road together. So that is neat. And, you know, I've lived here for 47 years and worked in the seafood industry most of my life here. So I've seen, you know, I'm surprised I don't speak about six different languages, but I know how to say wake up in many languages from running the seafood plants. But I think it's one of the things that makes Unalaska special, because we have even the Yunnan culture that's been here for 10,000 years and mixed in with all the other ones. It makes Unalaska special. And, you know, it has been so important to the seafood industry, the work ethic of these immigrants. And it goes back to the turn of the century in Alaska. It's ingrained for the Chinese, the Japanese, the Filipinos, and the salmon canneries. The success story of so many of the immigrants is really amazing. I had one Korean family that worked for me at East Point for like 7 years. Now they own like six 7-Elevens in Los Angeles, and you know, many other stories of people that have success. Just even in our town, some of my process workers got on crab boats and made, you know, now own 200-300 acre ranches in Mexico and Arizona.
But it's really, really here on the Canary up here, you know, like UNICE, Westward, anybody, there's all mostly immigrant people, our workers. Like Aliesca, we have like 80% are Filipinos, and no, not 80% of Filipinos. We have probably maybe 70 or maybe, and then 30% Mexican, and then we have like 10% Vietnamese, you know. Even if you go UNICE and Westward people, they're mostly Spanish people there too, and Filipinos. I mean, you only barely see a lot of white people are working downstairs. They're all immigrant. They're all immigrant people, and they're all a minority.
One student says that he values the diversity of the island, but it makes it harder to hold on to his ties to Anungan culture. The Anungan people were the first inhabitants of the island.
It's kind of strange because, like you said, you thought like I was a white man. You probably think he is too, but we're both actually a quarter native. So like our like parents, our ancestors actually like lived in these islands, but now we are like the outcasts here kind of. And I don't know, I think it's just interesting how things flipped like that. But it's also, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but.
Tell me more, what do you mean you feel like that your ancestors are the outcasts in the islands now?
Well, just looking at this class, there's like three native kids, me, Connor, and Angie. And compared to, I don't know how many other, yeah, and there's 14 people of other, racial backgrounds.
How do you think that's impacted your cultural identity and cultural expression?
I think we've kind of lost it, and that's like kind of what they talk about at the culture camp here that they have every summer. It's just trying to maintain the culture, because like even though I'm native, like Alaska native, I wasn't raised or like taught, and like the language, I wasn't taught like any of that. And it just shows how it's wore off over time. And it's kind of sad.
What culture were you raised with?
American.
What's that mean?
Cheeseburgers and fries. Yeah. And I don't know, like we pretty much just growing up here, like I've had like a normal childhood that you might think like any other kid from a city would. Like we have like Halloween, like Christmas, like we celebrate like all those normal things. And it's just strange because I come from a place where none of that used to happen.
Normal things. You use
normal,
the
normal to us, I guess, here in America, because I'm American.
And so that's how you like. And how does it make you feel when someone like me who doesn't know you makes this assumption that you identify as white?
I mean, it doesn't really bother me because growing up my whole life, like no one has assumed I'm native just by looking at me. So I've kind of gotten used to it, become desensitized in a way. And yeah, so really like the only way people would know I'm native is if I tell them. So it's kind of just like a secret, like it's like cards, like I could hide up my sleeve kind of, you know, it's like, I don't know.
Do you tell them?
I usually don't tell people.
Why?
I don't know.
Many community members and students say in Unalaska, culture matters, but it isn't a barrier.
One of the things about schools, I think, are that they're kind of the great equalizer as far as socially. And so in any given class, I probably have, I don't know, 6-10 cultures represented, and I'm the minority. I'm Caucasian, which I love. And I think my students have, and I mean this in a good way, but, and there's some students here that can correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes I feel like there's almost like racial or ethnic blinders, meaning that everybody's just very accepting of each other, and they're sort of, they grow up together, and they are friends because they're friends, and they're from the same place, and they connect because of similar interests more than because of where they come from. And I think that's a really, it's a really powerful thing to grow up with. And I don't know that they always recognize that until they leave. And then a lot of times they come back and they talk about, you know, how truly diverse and accepting our school is.
My freshman year, second semester, I transferred to a school in Bellevue, Washington, and we had about like 1,200 kids there. And you know, there was legit segregation. Like my first day at lunch, I noticed Mexicans at this table, Asians at this table, like, you know, like people who were into, you know, actually like paying attention to class, like over here, and then, you know, like cool kids like over there. So it was really segregated, but you know, here there's no really segregation. I mean, you know, there are, you know, like conservative people on this island, you know, that are like pretty racist, but other than that, you know, for the most part, I think this community is just full of, you know, loving people, and there's just a lot of acceptance in this community, which, you know, like I will never take for granted, because, you know, like stepping into the real world, like, you know, there's all sorts of different people, and like, you know, all like those crazy racist people you see on TV, like that I didn't think that would be real. Like in the real world, everything's real. Like it's just crazy. You know, like, I just thought that everything, you know, would just be happy, because growing up here, and then moved to Seattle, and then, you know, my eyes were opened.
My best friends, like from kindergarten, like are pretty much still my best friends now. Like I've known like a lot of these guys since first day of school, and we're all different, you know, Asian, Native, white, and just doesn't really matter in this community.
Well, it's right what Miss P said about the whole cultural blinders, you know what I mean? Because I came here in 2014, and I came from Seattle and a performing arts school where there's usually just a crap ton of Caucasian people, I'm being honest. And when I came up here, it was just very interesting on how everyone's really accepting with everyone, you know what I mean? That just how everybody's just very accepting of other people's religion, nationalities, and everything else.
I'm an ESL teacher, so my students come from all over, you know, and I've taught many places in the world, and this is absolutely the best stateside school I have ever taught at. The kids, if they don't like each other, it's because something about the personality. It's not about the minority or whatever race. It's not about if they're rich or poor. So I find, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but what I see are the kids, if they like each other, it's all about the person and about their heart, not about, oh, well, this one has more money or this one's from this country. So I love it here. I think it's the best.
We just recognize people as people, I guess, like no divisions, just like, oh, that's my friend Chester, that's Tav, that's Marja, that's Angie.
So how did we get to this point of what seems like perfection in some ways? And I mean, the way it's being described is that this is a truly integrated community.
One of the things that I noticed is that so many of the kids, when you have a discussion, they have traveled outside of this country. And in schools where I've worked before, it was more the students that came from a family that could take a vacation to another country. Here, kids go to another country, either they came from another country or they're going back to visit relatives. And so these kids have traveled. So they've seen a lot of different cultures, and they've been in situations where they haven't known the language, where they have to figure things out. And so I think that's part of the equalizer. And I don't think it's nirvana. I always think that there are always issues to work out, and people are going to have biases and prejudices. But I think that because we have a group of people that have that shared experience of having to figure things out and have seen other ways of living and not just one way of living, that I think that makes a difference, because it makes for open minds.
It just reminded my childhood life. I compared. So I like here this diversity city. So it opened my mind. Before I was in Mongolia, and my childhood time, it was a communist time, so it is very closed community, and I didn't see the white people or something. And when I see first the white person, it was so you know, interesting on me. And then vacuum kind of community, every newspaper, everything tells the, for example, Americans are bad, you know, it washed my mind. I thought the community says like that, and I believed it, you know, and probably if kept like that communism, and then I still believe it, and then fight against whatever, you know, against America, whatever, you know, if things happens. So when I later in 1990, Mongolia become a democratic country. So, and then we get more information from out world, and it opened my eyes, opened my mind. So, and then later I went to Sweden. Sweden was really a diversity country, and it opened my mind more, you know. And then I later came here, and then it is really different cultures, you know. It makes not only Mongolian side or communist side of the view, it makes the diversity makes many different view I can see. The open society and many different culture seeing and more meeting the different culture people, and it opens my mind. I think it is really important, the diversity, yeah.
No, I absolutely agree that it is a diverse community over here, and everybody is very accepting. So I think that speaks a lot about the place here. So I have been here for about a year. So
what brought you to Unalaska, and what was it like when you first arrived?
Originally, I'm from Singapore. So I grew up in a multiracial society, where when you go to school, there's not just one race or one culture or predominant race or predominant culture. It's like everybody's there. We have the Chinese, the Japanese, the Eurasians, the Europeans, you know, everybody from everywhere. So me, for myself personally, I've grown up that way, and most of my children, or half of my children, have grown up that way too, because they grew up in Singapore. The other half of my children grew up here and in Canada. So speaking of my younger children, when they move over here, well, in America. Mm-hmm. We moved here in 2005 from Singapore. Back then, it was really different. I can see my eldest, my children, I have three of them who grew up in Singapore, came here at the age of 14 years old, and they find that, well, this is such a different culture from what they used to be, and it was in Washington. So in their classroom, they're the only one who's mixed, because my husband is from Washington, from Spokane. So they're the only one who's a different look and has a different background, because they grew up in Singapore. So they find it very difficult to get adjusted. It takes them a while till they go to high school. And then we moved to Canada. In Canada, it was a small town. So it was majority white town. So there isn't anybody who is different there, except for us. So coming down here, it's good. Now with me, I have just the three younger ones who has grown up in America. So to them, this is really nice, because this brings back their memory when they were really young, when they were toddler age. So they see the people around them. They see a lot more Asians. I live around Dutch Harbor site, so mostly everywhere you go, you know, you see lots of different races and lots of different cultures.
Do you see a difference between your children who are raised in Singapore in a very multicultural society versus your younger kids who were primarily raised until they got here in a predominantly white community?
Yes, I do. Even my eldest, he was just saying, why are my brothers so different? Well, the manner of speaking is different, I think, because they grew up in the school system here, so it's not, they're not, like, culture is not a big thing here. It's like, well, the Asian culture is different. The Asian culture is very respecting of the elders. That's forefront, but not over here. So
even here on Alaska, do you feel?
I couldn't say in on Alaska because we just been here. So, and my children, it's, you know, it's their first year of school here. So, but I've seen that they have grown out there easily compared to anywhere else. Like when we moved in Canada, it takes them about a year or 2 years to get out and get, you know, open themselves up to everybody else or the rest of the students. And then coming here, it was easier. It was like we just within 6 months, they're able to get more friends, you know, just feel more comfortable at school.
One of the things that I noticed is that so many of the kids, when you have a discussion, they have traveled outside of this country. And in schools where I've worked before, it was more the students that came from a family that could take a vacation to another country. Here, kids go to another country, either they came from another country or they're going back to visit relatives. And so these kids have traveled. So they've seen a lot of different cultures and they've been in situations where they haven't known the language, where they have to figure things out. And so I think that's part of the equalizer. And I don't think it's nirvana. I always think that there are always issues to work out and people are gonna have biases and prejudices. But I think that because we have a group of people that have that shared experience of having to figure things out and have seen other ways of living and not just one way of living, that I think that makes a difference because makes for open minds.
This past summer, I went to the East Coast. I don't know why, I'm drawn to it. I like it, why not? But there's definitely like less Asian people and more white people. And like, I don't see that as like a challenge. Like, I think that's just, okay, so there's more of them, few of me, so what? You know, I'm still me, I'm still doing my own thing. It's like, it shouldn't matter like what race we are or like who we are. Cause like Tav said earlier, we're all human beings inside. We're made of bones. We're made of atoms. Like, okay, we bleed. It's not like you bleed something else. And it's like, I think I'm ready to go anywhere. Like, America is just one country. There's like 100 more out there.
Though the conversation participants value the diversity and see how it strengthens the communities and prepares students for the wider world, they agree that Unalaska isn't perfect. Like many towns in the United States, even though the general population is diverse, the local leadership is not. The mayor says the school board does have people from different backgrounds, but the city council has work to do.
We need to work on getting some more nationalities involved. We do have a Filipino council member, but we haven't had a lot of people step up for that board. I think it's coming though, and I think some of the younger generation, if they stay in this community, will get involved.
But as mayor, are you doing anything to try to encourage people
In the past, I think we've tried to recruit various people to come to run for office. And this last go round, we did have, I don't remember how many different. I don't think there was very many different nationalities, but. But we did have a lot of races finally with that were contested, and that's something that we haven't often seen. So that's showing that we had, and a lot of them were younger people wanting to get involved, and that was a good sign. So I think it's starting to come around, but I think it'd be nice if we had some more minority candidates stepping forward, and you know, and there's people that could do the job, that you see these, we have so many different business people in the community that are from various countries that, you know, if they had the time, I think they would do well.
What do people within the community feel like could be done to get more people of color involved in city council and in leadership positions? Or is that necessary?
Everyone needs to be represented for sure. So I think we do. Absolutely, we need representation for everyone. And you should look at a city council and see yourself there. You should see your culture reflected there. That's one of the MLK night is so nice because everyone is reflected there. But I do think that more adult ESL classes would be helpful, because I do think that language holds people back. I think that there are some very, very capable people that do not feel that their English is strong enough. So I think that would be helpful.
Community members at the conversation agreed that the city government needs to focus on recruiting a wider variety of people to serve. People also see a divide between residents who live in Unalaska full-time and the people who work at the processing plants.
So I hesitate to speak because I'm just a visitor. I've been coming to Unalaska for seasonally, basically, for the last 3 or 4 years, 3.5 years. I did notice a cultural divide every time I've come, and that seems to be exactly that, between the residents and between the processors. And so I'm curious if that's true, if that divide exists, and what the community thinks about that divide.
Susie again. I think you're right in a way that it feels like there's a lot of communities within our community, and I think that part of it is the transience of the work itself, and just the transience of the community. And sometimes that's a difficult thing for myself as a resident to see all this transience. And some of us old timers talk about that it's hard to sort of make friends because they kind of move on. But the upside is that you get to meet a lot of people from a lot of different cultures. But it is hard sometimes because we don't always connect with each other.
Something I see is that with the transients, we've got both a challenge but an opportunity, and it's always mine and my wife's families were both kind of raised here a bit, and so I guess I kind of think of myself as local. We've sort of rooted, and so as the quality of life has gotten better here, the challenge has always been people are coming and going, and as Susie's pointing out, for locals who have invested themselves in people and then those people move on and then invested themselves and those people move on, there's this heartbreak that you just live with of people move on. And it's kind of like being a world traveler and you go places and the hardest thing is saying goodbye. And it's like the thing that I dread now about going anywhere is you're going to meet cool people and you're going to appreciate them, and then they're going to be gone, or you're going to be gone. And conversely, you know, you can live dreading that and just kind of hole up, or you end up with an opportunity to meet people and appreciate each other and develop some understanding for each other, and that doesn't have to go away.
You're listening to Community in Unity, a conversation with adults and students in Unalaska Dutch Harbor. In a small town with a large immigrant population, people wanted to talk about how immigration has shaped their community and how national policy and rhetoric could change their home in the future. It's a conversation that's happening elsewhere in Alaska as well. In March, I spoke with a family in Anchorage who's confronting their fears about the impacts of changing immigration policy on their family. Mateo and Valentine sit in their immaculate living room. The furniture, the art, the wall color, it's all perfectly coordinated, like you'd see in a magazine. A teacup-sized puppy in a pink sweater bounces around their feet and climbs up on the interpreter's lap.
They've just bought a house a few months ago, thinking that they had a life in America, but not in the United States. But now, even being here, they don't feel like the house really belongs to them.
The couple arrived with two of their children in 2005 from Latin America. I'm not using their real names or their country of origin. They have immigration documents, but they aren't permanent residents. One of their children is undocumented. Mateo says they could be considered criminals just for having a child who is undocumented living in their house.
Quisiéramos decir que esto es una pesadilla porque...
They want to think sometimes that it's a nightmare because you can wake up from a nightmare. But right now, it's just simply terrifying.
Mateo used to work as a police officer fighting drug cartels in Latin America. He was used to receiving death threats, but he says 10 years ago, they threatened to kill his oldest son. He realized the danger was real and imminent, so they fled to the United States. Valentin had to leave her oldest daughter behind with her parents. She hasn't seen her in a decade. Their immigration lawyer, Leah McDermott, says the family, like many others, are in limbo. She says up until the new orders were issued, if a person filed paperwork to try to stay in the country legally, they would be somewhat protected from being deported by the Department of Homeland Security.
In other words, DHS knows you're here, but because you're in the process of applying for a benefit, you're considered extremely low priority for removal. Well, now all the priorities are out the window. I mean, Trump has announced that basically everyone is a priority for removal.
We should expect to see more people deported who are married to American citizens and don't have criminal records. That's what I'm seeing.
That's Margaret Stock, another immigration lawyer in Anchorage. Stock says it's not like people want to be out of compliance with immigration laws. It's just really complicated.
If you want to get your paperwork here in America processed, you have to have the money and the time, and you have to have all your documents in order, and it's not easy for people to do.
For Mateo and Valentin, it was hard to live without documents their first few years in the country. Mateo says he felt like one of the criminals he used to pursue was a law enforcement officer. As soon as they had documents and social security numbers, the couple established their own businesses and started building their lives here in safety. Mateo says he's worried about how immigration laws are being enforced and what that means for his family. But he's also worried about how attitudes towards immigrants are changing.
They're not worried about the wall that Trump wants to build at the border. They're worried about the wall that is being built through hate and rejection of immigrants in the hearts and minds of people, because that's a wall that you can't see.
He says, for now, they're just living their lives as normally as possible, saving the money they plan to use to expand their house and setting it aside, just in case. But they can't go back to Latin America because it's too dangerous. They want to stay here in their home. During April's Community and Unity in Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, the conversation turned to the local effects of the national rhetoric on immigration, as well as potential policy changes. Community members say the stories they hear from the rest of the country about the construction of the border wall with Mexico, changing attitudes towards immigrants, and travel bans on people from predominantly Muslim nations reverberate locally.
We live in a place where I think in this place, for the most part, we are very accepting of each other, but we're still America. And so everything that's dominating the news, a lot of the conversations that are happening nationally and in the world right now are pretty much hard to ignore. And I think there's that, I mean, my students talk about it all the time. I have students from, you know, from Mexico. I have students that are Muslim. I have students from, you know, all over the world. And they're nervous. They're worried. This is sort of a new place for them to be. You know, my students from Mexico don't understand what the wall is about. You know, they don't understand what it means for them. You know, are they going to see their relatives again? If relatives that are here, are they going to have to go back? You know, I mean, I think in this place we're comfortable, but so many people here are tied to people that maybe can't come here. You know, that maybe can't get a green card, or that maybe have a green card and they don't know if they can keep it. And I think that's an impossible atmosphere and fear to overcome locally. I mean, you know, you can do a lot as far as being accepting, but I think a lot of people don't know how to talk about it right now, or don't know how to, I mean, I'm white, but my husband is from Mongolia. And he has relatives that would like to come visit us, and they can't. They can't get visas. And, you know, I'm kind of speaking for him, but his heart's divided, you know. He lives here and he lives there. And if you can't bring your family here, then you know, you're not, it's hard to be a full participant in the world, so.
I'm Lynn. I'm worried about people who may be unsafe in their relationships, and because they either have questionable status or they don't know their status for whatever reason, that they won't call for help when they need it from either the police or someone else because they're afraid that they'll be penalized. If they're undocumented, or if their partner is abusive and is the one that's sponsoring them or help them come over, you know, they might be afraid and they might stay. It's happening all over the country.
I think you could lose community members too if they have relatives in the lower 48 that are being threatened or think they're being threatened. So you're going to lose people that are that have jobs here that are, that could impact the community. You know, it going back to the 70s here in Unalaska, Susie and some of the other longtime residents might remember. But in those days, you know, people didn't do a real good job of looking at your IDs in those days or have your documentation right. And naturally, all the laws have been upgraded. So you're in big trouble if your company doesn't follow the rules. But, you know, we used to have immigration sweeps. They'd come into all the coastal towns in Alaska and look for illegal people. And, you know, it was quite traumatic. You know, we had people living up on bunkers on Ballyhoo and hiding out in abandoned cabanas, and so it can be quite traumatic. And people in the lower 48, you know, you're hearing stories of people that have a traffic violation and been here for 30 years, raised a family, great citizens, and now they're being deported and leaving their family behind because of minor offenses and things. So it's troubling, and possibly the same thing could happen here.
I think when you talk about policy, it's not even to the point of policy. I think that when you just hear all this rhetoric and you hear all this negative, and for me, the fear is that we live in this great place, but if our voices are not heard now, it will become policy, and our voices won't be heard because we are in a good place, and we work hard to have the community that we do. And so, I mean, I know policies are coming down the road, but even before that happens, I think that's my fear, is that our voices won't be heard and that the noise of that negativity is what is going to prevail.
I think you guys are right that you know, our welcoming kind of compassionate community has been catching. You know, it's just kind of who we are and what we've been, but fear is catchy too. I mean, once you start, you know, dividing people and scaring people and separating people, then that's not a good thing. And people, I mean, you see it happen down south. I mean, that's what people are doing. They're, you know, this, I hate to say it, but it's the stupidity is catching. And you have to be careful of that. You really have to be careful. And like you say, growing up in the 60s and 70s, people fought hard for the rights we have, and if we don't stick up for them and continue to do that, we're going to be in trouble. You know, we kind of take it for granted here, but you're right, we want to make sure our voices are heard.
I think it's a matter of like open-mindedness, and I know the media and all that, they twist words, and other people just twist each other's words naturally. So on the topic of racism and all that, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to talk about just because of that, because people aren't open-minded about it. And, you know, immigration, segregation, all that, every other issue that's been on everybody's minds. So it just comes down to being more open to new ideas and concepts and people.
We can't let media paint the picture for us. Like, I feel like all too often we like let what we see like permeate to us and change our own beliefs, but like we still can like resist it, you know? Like, we forget that we're capable of making our own decisions, and we just follow what everyone else does because I feel like it's in the nature of our like survival, like social survival in a way. Like, we want to follow everyone because we believe that that's gonna like keep us in line with whatever we're trying to do with our lives, wherever we're trying to get. But like, I don't know, we need to break that, is what I'm saying.
Most of the things, like dangerous things that happen that kill people, are committed by our own people. And I think it's crazy how we're like restricting ourselves to within our country. Like, there's a really big world out there. There's 7 billion people roughly, and like we can't even get along with each other in our own country. How are we even like planning to get along with other with people from other countries? Like, I don't know. I think I'm really open to like anybody. Like, I don't care what your background is. I don't care who you are. If you're nice to me, I'm nice to you. And it's like, I think like all this immigration stuff and like talks about, oh, let's ban all these Muslims, or let's ban all the people from these countries. Let's ban this religion. Like, why should it matter? I mean, yeah, we're trying to protect ourselves, quote, quote, but we're not really like benefiting from it. And it's more like, I don't know, they're restricting ourselves from gaining more, or from diversifying ourselves, or making everyone equal.
It's just kind of hard watching, you know, like the news, because all I see, you know, is just like, okay, number one, it's just like, it's something about Donald Trump, or it's something about our government, or, you know, just like people dying and like attacks and stuff like that. And it's just sad, because I think that they're just trying to make us scared. They're trying to distract us. It's just a steamer, as our history government teacher, Mr. Dickrell, said. I just think that, you know, it's like everyone should just, you know, just accept the fact that we live in a very colorful world. We live in a very diverse world. You know, it's just like you just got to see it as it is, you know, and you just can't see it any other way, because you're just lying to yourself if you are. And
so how do you get people to see that and get people to respect that living in a colorful world is a good thing?
Music, yeah. I'd most likely say music, yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, you know, me and along with like probably, I want to say like stretching down like four of these dudes right here. We know this a lot. This rapper named Logic, and he recently released a song called Everybody, and you know, the chorus goes like, you know, like, everybody people, everybody bleed, everybody needs something, everybody love, everybody know how it go. So, you know, I'm that right there, you know, it's just like a really big message in my opinion, just because he's just really saying the simple things that, you know, make us all realize that we're all people, and that we all get treated like, you know, in messed up ways. We all get treated differently. And yeah, I think that's something that everyone in this world needs to realize.
How many people in this community feel represented in the United States government? And I think probably that's another big concern, is that I think a lot of people that live here locally probably do not feel represented nationally. And that's the discussion, right? And I think a lot of us feel, there's a little bit of a helplessness, you know, like, what do you do to help support your community members who maybe aren't supported by the law, or aren't, you know, represented at a, you know, in conversation, you know, who don't feel represented. What do we do as a community? How can we help our, you know, local residents feel supported? I think that's a very, very urgent question that's really hard to answer.
I think with what's going on, you know, with Trump and with all this immigrant policy, I think that one of the things we can do as kind of strong local residents that don't have fear of being deported, that we need to have some guts and stand up and stick up for people. Because, you know, this is the backbone of our community. All these people that come from around the world and work here, and sometimes you hear some really heart-wrenching stories about people who, you know, get, you know, every penny they have together to send one family member over the oceans to work and send money home. And what more honorable thing can there be to do? I mean, you know, I've never had to go through that, you know. So I think that one of the things that we can do as kind of residents here, you know, who aren't afraid, is to just not be afraid.
Why is our community so rich here? It's because of, if you guys know anything about the ecosystem in the ocean around here, what makes us rich is the flux. there's this massive flow, this massive tidal exchange from the Pacific to the Bering, and it stirs up this mass amount of food, and so there's this huge ecological resource going on here. Well, it's the same with people. There's this influx, and I think we're learning something here that I didn't realize as a kid till I moved somewhere that was a lot less diversified, and the realization that there's this influx, and there's this constant flow and turbulence of people, but don't waste opportunities. So hopefully the relationships we have outside of here, you know, we can relate what we're learning about living somewhere where there's more than people who look like us, and pass it on to people who aren't here, and hopefully just change perspective person to person.
I guess, well, because I haven't lived here for like an extended period of my life, and I don't know if I'm like the whitest person here, because I'm mainly European descent, Norwegian and all that. I think like looking in on this community from the outside and then coming into it was opening to me. It was like a moment of opening your heart and mind to a bunch of new people and a bunch of new thought processes and everything like that, and it was really nice.
I think without the immigrant workforce here, the community as an industrial community as we know it would be a ghost town, and the president should come here and see that. We haven't had a president of the United States here since Roosevelt in World War II, and while he was a different party, they were both from New York as is President Trump, so he should come here and see how dependent it is on the immigrant workforce here.
Figure out how Air Force One can land on 3,900 feet. You'll have to go like Roosevelt and Truman did by battleship. Now we don't have any battleships left either.
This place is better than Mar-a-Lago, so come on out to Unalaska.
This was Community in Unity, Unalaska, a conversation about immigration and diversity in Unalaska Dutch Harbor, recorded in April 2017. It's a co-production of Unalaska Community Broadcasting and Alaska Public Media. To hear other episodes of Community in Unity, go to alaskapublic.org.
Everybody people, everybody bleed, everybody need some, everybody love, everybody know how it goes. Everybody people, everybody bleed, everybody need some, everybody love, everybody know. I've been knocking door down like a Jehovah's Witness. God is my witness, a witness, but on the real, I think I need another.